Chris, is that okay?
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of Senate Highways and Transportation to order. Secretary, take the roll, please.
Vice Chair Welborn.
Here.
Vice Chair Boland.
Here.
Senator Bennett.
Here.
Senator Fitzpatrick.
Here.
Senator Fox.
Here.
Senator Fidel.
Here.
Senator Glim.
Here.
Senator Gross.
Excused, I guess.
Senator McGilvray.
Here.
Senator Manzella.
Here.
Senator Sands.
Excused.
Senator Smith.
Here.
Chairman Vance.
Here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, we're going to start with SJ 12 because the sponsor said it's going to be a very short hearing. So with that, Senator Pope.
Let's see how I do here, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Chair Vance and Vice Chairs Welborn and Boland and committee, thank you very much. It's an honor to be in front of you today. I'm Senator Chris Pope, POPE, from Senate District 31 in Bozeman. I'm happy today to bring you Senate Joint Resolution 12, a study bill to help Montana prepare for the future electrification of its transportation sector. Committee, some of you may remember that there was a House bill version of this last year, the last session, that passed and was headed for an interim study, but the COVID hung up some of those activities, and while some of the issues were addressed properly, the study really failed to comprehensively address the electrification of transportation. So I bring this bill, Senate Joint Resolution 12. I won't read the preambles, but suffice to say that a study remains very important and relevant to a coming change, technological change, and how we get around. And I will mention a few of those pieces that are important for us to understand before this change comes to our state. Over the next 60 months, the major car and truck manufacturers will bring literally dozens of all electric models to market. And unlike our last session 2 years ago, we're starting to see those advertisements on TV and elsewhere. In one example, VW, the world's largest automaker, says it's going to spend upwards of $100 billion to electrify its entire product line by 2025. So long-haul truck companies like Navistar and Daimler and Peterbilt report they're in the early stages of a fleet vehicle development for electric semi-tractor trailer rigs that one day, in the not-too-distant future, will routinely travel on our routes with I-90 and I-15 and then the feeder routes to our major cities. The rapid reduction in battery cost and then a promised 50% reduction in fuel and maintenance costs over the lifetime of the vehicle is what's driving it. It's all going to be about lower cost. Building the electric infrastructure needed to support this transformation will take years, perhaps decades. What's called the essential infrastructure will begin being built in our city centers and along highly trafficked interstate corridors. For utilities, it's a major industry. We're going to see all made in Montana electrons basically fueling these vehicles, and it's in the gigawatts of power. So if you're up to speed on your utility measures, a gigawatt is a very large amount of electric power. So SJ 12 calls for an interim study to study the questions that we have a very important need for sooner than later. What's the market and technology changes that are coming? What will be the state's government's role in helping create a jobs and an economic opportunity in this new industry? What are the obstacles that exist in our regulatory framework? What are the safety and performance and tax considerations for the installation of charging stations and also for the maintenance and repair and so forth of the vehicles themselves? And what will be the future role of our public utilities and co-ops? And what's the role of the Public Utility Commission in this transition? So there's a fair bit of work still to be done. In closing, I'm just going to ask that if the bill goes forward, perhaps it could be a joint study between transportation and the Energy Interim Committee, which I've been sitting on for the past number of sessions. The key is for us all to establish legislative intent. What's our vision in this branch, and how can we optimize the economic opportunity of electric transportation for the private sector, for our utilities, for our communities, and for Montana consumers. Mr. Chair, with that, I'm done. And I will stay and be available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pope. You were pretty close. A little over, but not bad.
Okay.
Are there proponents to SJ-12?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Brian Thompson, T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N. I'm here today on behalf of the Montana Contractors Association. We certainly encourage the study of electrification of our transportation infrastructure and systems. It's a growing industry. More and more electric vehicles are on our roads than there were a couple of years ago, and I suspect that the same is going to be true in the future again. I think it's really important to realize the role of the electric vehicle in the funding of our infrastructure, especially right now. The vast majority of our especially highway transportation infrastructure is funded through fuel tax. And as you know, when you move away from fuel, your tax revenues are going to go significantly down, and we're going to run into some problems potentially if we're not collecting tax revenue for our roads, bridges, and highways. I would encourage that this bill pass and that the consideration of how we're going to fund our highway infrastructure in the future be a part of that study and discussion. I'll be here if you have any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Further proponents?
Good afternoon. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Andrew Valinis, last name is V-A-L-A-I-N-I-S, and I'm the executive director of the Montana Renewable Energy Association. I think this is my first time ever presenting in this committee, so MREA is a nonprofit advocacy group that works with small-scale renewable energy installers, so the businesses who install things like rooftop solar and small wind systems. I'm here today in support of this bill because electric vehicles have an opportunity to pair and synergize with small-scale renewable energy. We conducted a study with a number of stakeholders over the course of about 18 months in partnership with the National Renewable Energy Lab looking at electrified transportation and opportunities to pair that with solar energy. So I know there are a lot of issues to discuss within this study, but I think the opportunity is connected to our energy sector, as the good sponsor mentioned, are important as well, and we hope you consider that. We'd love to provide information about the study that we conducted for whatever interim committee or joint committee ends up working on that. So I thank the sponsor for bringing this forward, and hope you all give it a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Valinis. Are there further no more proponents. Are there any opponents out there? Informational witnesses. Questions from the committee. Seeing none, sponsor. Oh, sorry, Senator McGilbray.
Mr. Chairman, for the sponsor.
Senator Pope.
Yes, please. Senator Pope, Mr. Thompson brought up about how are you going to fund infrastructure if we have a bunch of electric vehicles running around paying no gas taxes. So are you open to adding that as part of the study to determine the taxation of electric vehicles to mitigate the loss of revenue from gas tax? Or is that already in here?
I think if we read it carefully, the word tax probably, I may have left that out, but that would be a friendly amendment in my view, and I should just say, there's a spectrum of thought on this, but I think most of the folks who are very sort of strongly supportive and also excited about some of this opportunity, we recognize that the tax piece has to be in there. These new vehicles will have to pay their way, and it has to be fair. And so I would certainly appreciate it if the committee wants to put that in. That's great. I think it's a very important piece, and there will be taxes on these electric vehicles, I can assure you. We do need, as a state, to understand what's fair and how to do that properly.
Follow-up or?
Thank you for the question.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, sponsor care to close.
I would just say thank you, committee. I hope I lived up to my promise at the, 7 minutes ago. I do want to say that one of the things that I carry around in the top three things for myself as a senator is just to work together, all of us, and be able to express our legislative intent about things that are really important to us. And I think we do that every day. In the energy sector, I think we're still, and maybe challenged because of the complexities, no doubt, and differences of opinion. But I really hope that this bill can help us express our legislative intent, and I'm speaking in a bipartisan sense. I think we all can find a very, very comfortable place for most of our thoughts about this industry going forward, and I'm excited to explore that, and I hope you'll support this bill. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Pope. That closes the hearing on SJ-12. We'll now go to Senate Bill 274. Senator Friedel.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Committee. Apparently, today is the long day because even my hair is not even staying where it's supposed to be. So, thank you for hearing this today. My name is Senator Chris Friedel. I am from the magical city of Billings. I bring forward today Senate Bill 274. Now, I know we've heard about two or three of these, if not four of these, this session. And I took what the committee had to heart in regards to maybe we need to kind of look at these before I brought this in front of you. And so before I made the decision to bring this bill in front of you, I wanted to make sure, without a doubt, that this truly is something that we need to bring forward. I bring forward to you today an act to establish a memorial highway that stretches from Highway 3, the roundabout, all the way out to the interstate, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But one of the things I want to do is, they always say that life is the dash between the years, and I want to give you a brief history of Pedro. Pedro moved to Hardin, Montana when he was at the age of 7 years old. He grew up in that area. In 1962 to 66, Pedro enlisted in the Air Force and reaching the rank of Staff Sergeant. That is not an easy feat, especially when we're talking about him serving his country during a very controversial time in our American history. In 1970, Pedro joined the police department and as a police motorcycle officer, think of Chips, Montana style. His partner, Clark Price, credits Pedro for saving his life. There was a time where an assailant tried to attempt to stab Mr. Price with a knife, which Mr. Price did not see. And like out of a TV script episode, Pedro reaches over and punches and knocks the assailant cold clean out. From 1972 to 75, Pedro served as a probation officer for juveniles, dealing with the youth, obviously, and that's how much he cared. He wanted to make sure that these kids were getting a firm hand, but at the same time, keeping them out of the judicial system. In 1975, up into 2017, Pedro served as a Yellowstone County Justice of the Peace, where he spent almost 43 years being the longest sitting judge in the state of Montana. As a judge, he not only served his community effectively, but he also discharged his duties compassionately. Over those 43 years, and this is something that I was flabbergasted when I found out, Pedro, from rough estimates, married between 11 and 15,000 couples. Let me reiterate that, almost 15,000 couples over his 40-year tenure. In fact, it spans third, fourth, and fifth generation Montanans, including my very own, where he married all three of my brothers. Pedro learned, and here's another fun fact, Pedro learned the Crow language, albeit not greatest of speaking of it, but he was viewed by high regards by my Crow brethren, because of his willingness to speak to them in their language to connect to the people that came into his court. Outside, he worked out of the courtroom. He did a lot of volunteering. He volunteered for the food bank, the Salvation Army, and even the Boys and Girls Run, amongst other many things that I would hope it would be a long, long list of notated. But I want to say that stats do not give credence to how much Pedro meant to our community. Now, I could have had somebody up here. I could have had a long list of proponents sit up here and say, I support, I support, I support. But I didn't want to belabor this committee for that very reason. That's why I handed out just a little bit of the people that love this man so much that they're willing to put their name on there. In fact, as we speak right now, I continue to get emails from prominent judges and attorneys and people that have worked in his courtroom and were in his courtroom. And at that, I will sit down for any other discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any proponents in the hallway? No. There's one proponent on Zoom whenever he's ready. We're ready when you are, sir.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, my name is Dr. Friedel. I was asked this year by the family of Pedro to speak at his funeral, which was a very humbling experience for me because of the man who he was. Having done that, I had to think a lot long and hard about what I could do, and what I came up with was, instead of speaking about the accomplishments, which Senator Friedel just did, I decided to speak about the man himself. The man himself I've known for over 30 years in our community. And when Senator Friedel decided to memorialize Pedro's service here for our community, I thought it was apropos about the street that he chose to do it on. Because that street, right in the middle of that particular section he just described, sits our courthouse, the Yellowstone County Courthouse, where Pedro Hernandez sat for 43 years as a justice of the peace judge. I've had a lot of times to go in his court and watch him. So when I was asked to speak there, and I was also asked to speak by a number of people, judges and lawyers here in Yellowstone County, on behalf today, so that we could move along this Senate, because you have a lot of business. When I did that, there was one word that just kept coming up for me to describe Pedro Hernandez. And that word was empathy. Pedro didn't show sympathy, because that's looking down on someone, that's pitying them. He showed empathy to every person that walked into his courthouse. He showed that when he served all the things he did. But who was he? Empathy simply means focusing on the other person, not making it about you. And that described Pedro Hernandez to a T, as far as I could see. I've known him for 30 years. He married my oldest son. I now have a 25-year-old granddaughter and an 8-year-old grandson from that. So I've known him for a long time. And Pedro served Montana with dignity. So I hope that you can see the validity of memorializing someone that's given so much to our state and our county. And I hope that you pass this to the Senate floor so that we can forever understand what we call 27th Street, Highway 3, could be basically named after a great inspiration to our community. That's pretty much all I have to say, and thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman and Senators.
Thank you, Doctor. Are there any opponents in the hallway? No. Okay. Questions from the committee? Seeing none, sponsor care to close.
Thank you, Chairman. I just want to leave you with this. I wanted to mention on why I referred to the Honorable Judge Pedro Hernandez by his first name. This wasn't to mean of disrespect, but an ode to how Pedro treated everybody like family. And like family, and for this, he will always be considered a part of mine. And I do thank you, committee, and I hope that is a positive vote on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Friedel. That closes the hearing on Senate Bill 274. We'll now open the hearing on Senate Bill 300. Senator Glenn? Well, you're important.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Carl Glimm, Senate District 2, GLIMM. Today I bring before you Senate Bill 300, which is a revision to the driver's ed laws. So I don't know if everybody realizes, but driver's ed is something that is in high demand. In our biggest school district in Flathead County, there are room for approximately half of the students is all each year. And so I thought we probably need to do something about that. And COVID hit. And now it's even worse because all the driving got suspended for about a period of 6 months, at least in our county, longer probably in others. And there's a huge backlog of kids that would desire to be in driver's ed. So basically this is pretty simple. On the first page there, item number six, in the duties of the superintendent of public instruction, in addition to their education courses, we would include a commercially available private driver's ed course. So they'll set up the policy. If somebody wants to be an entrepreneur and start a business teaching driver's ed, then that will be available. A little bit further down the line there, establish alternative courses so that they can do it online. So we're doing all kinds of training online. We might as well be able to do driver's ed, the classroom portion, online also. And then the follow-up portion to that is that they'll create a policy also to allow the students to do the driving portion with their parent or guardian. If they do the online classroom portion, then they'll be able to do it with their parents. I think that's about it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Thank you, Senator Glenn. Are there any proponents in the hallway? No? Okay. Are there any opponents? No? Okay, we have opponents now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Amanda Curtis, C-U-R-T-I-S, and I'm the elected president of MFPE, and I'm here today representing also the Montana Rural Education Association and the Montana Quality Education Coalition. And we certainly appreciate the efforts of the sponsor and this committee to make driver's ed as accessible as possible to all Montana students. And as all of you know, driving is statistically one of the most dangerous things the vast majority of us will ever do. The best thing we can do to produce competent young drivers is to make sure that they have a competent, patient, and well-educated driving instructor who knows not just how to drive, but also knows how to teach. You've probably all had the experience of teaching a teenager to drive, and that scary moment when they get the accelerator and the brake pedal confused. It's terrifying every single time, no matter how many times it happens. Currently, drivers, educator, instructors need a teaching certificate indicating that they have a pedagogical training and either a minor or 12 additional credits. If this committee chooses to pass this bill, we hope that future superintendents, whoever they may be, choose to establish course requirements as outlined in items 10 and 11 of Section 1 that are as stringent as today's standards are, and we further hope that any future superintendents establish alternative course requirements that parents are licensed to drive, as well as receive the same level of training or experience that is commensurate with today's standards. As you all know, not every kid in Montana is lucky enough to grow up in a rural area or on a farm or a ranch where they have lots of time behind the wheel practicing with a loving family member who can teach them the skills and the patience and confidence that they need. And in the interest of those kids who aren't that lucky and the safety of all Montana families who use the roadways, we ask this committee to keep Montana roadways safe by keeping trained professionals in the driver's ed seat. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. We have one informational witness on Zoom, Mr. Bailey. Whenever you're ready, sir.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Ken Bailey, B-A-I-L-E-Y. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the Office of Public Instruction, and I'm available today to answer any questions about the fiscal implications of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Bailey. Questions from the committee? Senator Gross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for Mr. Bailey.
Mr. Bailey.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bailey, can you discuss the financial implications of this bill?
Mr. Chair and Senator Gross, as the way the bill is written, it really sets out a framework for these changes that were described. There's nothing that's mandatory. So right now, I can't say that there are any costs that have to be attributed to this bill. Anything that the schools might do to adopt changes would be voluntary.
Thank you, Mr. Bailey.
Further questions from the committee? Seeing none, sponsor care to close.
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the key components of this is its options. It allows parents options and different ways to get your kid driving. It is not a requirement that all kids have to have driver's ed, and if you get past a certain age, you don't have to take it. So doing this at least gets us into that realm of having the education done, and it's just options. So if parents don't want to teach their kids, that's completely understandable. But some parents do want to teach their own kids, and let's give them that option. Let's also give them the option to hire somebody if somebody wants to start a business and start teaching kids how to drive, because there's just not enough slots for them. So remember, it's for the kids. Thank you.
I was pretty sure you couldn't resist that. Thank you, Senator Glenn. That closes the hearing on Senate Bill 300. We will now open the hearing on Senate Bill 285. Hello, Senator.
Hello. I'm Senator Steve Heimbaugh from Senate District 18, which is Weibo, Dawson, and Richland counties, about 100 miles of the North Dakota line. Some of the best people, some of the best agricultural land in Montana. And I'm glad to be here today. I didn't know that there was so many distinguished senators here. But I just, what Senate Bill 285 is, it's a bill about agriculture gas tax refunds. And just a little bit of disclosure, I am in agriculture, so that's why I know about this bill. And this is an easy bill. It changes one word, so everybody can understand it. Just a little background, a little bit of background about gas tax refund. We get a certain, you have to prove that you're in agriculture before you get this refund. They look, it's something to do with your income tax. You have to prove that you get a certain amount of your income off agriculture. And we get, or you can get a gas tax refund up to 60%. So if you buy gas, I think it's like 24 cents now, you can get 60% of that back, which would be like 18 cents of it back. So, and what what happens with agriculture and on several places, there's lots of things that burn gas, vehicles and grain augers and four wheelers and power plants and that don't use the road for anything. So that's why this gas tax refund was in place for. And then there's vehicles that don't go on a county road. I got some of them that you wouldn't want to drive on a county road. And then there's vehicles that are on the county road sometimes, on the ramp sometimes. So there's lots of ranch vehicles that don't use the county road and don't really deserve to pay gas tax. They still got a PIT license on everything, but they don't have to pay all the gas tax. They do pay some, but not all. A couple problems with that we've run into in the last few years. We used to be able to store as much fuel as you wanted to on in the country. Now you're because of DEQ regulations, you got to only store 1,300 gallons without doing a big rim so that if something happens, it don't run into the river or into water. So without doing that, you can get 1,300 gallons. But then there's the problem with somebody has to deliver it. That's got to be. This is what I call the green part of the bill. If the delivery truck don't have to come out to your place, that's a good thing. The other thing that happens a lot of times is people will have fields on both sides of a gas pump, so they can go through and get fill up. Or people move cattle from one pasture to another, and they could go through and they could fill a vehicle up. So I think this could be a real asset to the agriculture community, and I think it would be a good deal for the whole fuel industry as you look at they wouldn't have to deliver. So anyway I think that what we're trying to do here is we're just going to put gasoline on here. I think it would be a help to a lot of people in agriculture. They wouldn't I guess in some of the bigger operations, they have big tanks like 4,000 or 5,000 gallons of storage. But some of the smaller operations don't do that, and when they drive by a gas pump, they see that gas is 10 cents lower than it would be delivered, and so it would make economic sense for them to buy it. But if they get 18 cents off on the gas refund, they probably won't. But what happens here is we just had to take our bulk receipts in before, but if we buy gas at a gas pump, you can just take receipts in and get refund on the gas tax that you do. So that's what we're looking for. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Heimbaugh. We'll hear from proponents to Senate Bill 285, none in the hallway. Okay, I know there's one proponent on Zoom. Whenever he's ready.
Mr. Chair, they're not online.
There aren't any. Oh, okay. Is there an informational witness on Zoom?
There is, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We'll hear from him then. Or her, maybe.
It's a her. Good afternoon.
Whenever you're ready, ma'am.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chairman Vance and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tracy Halupka, T-R-A-C-Y, H-A-L-U-B-K-A. I'm the supervisor of the motor fuel section at the Department of Transportation, and our section is the one that receives and processes the applications for the motor fuel tax refunds, and I'm here to answer any questions.
Thank you. There are no opponents on Zoom. Are there any opponents out in the hallway? Are there any opponents in the hallway? No? Okay. All right, questions from the committee. Senator McGilray.
The sponsor.
Senator Heimbaugh.
Mr. Chairman, Senator McGilray.
Senator Heimbaugh, why is there no fiscal note on this?
I don't know yet, I guess. And just to explain that to you, there could be one come, but I really don't think there should be one because I think if people cannot get fuel delivered to their place and get it refunded, if they can't buy it in town, they'll just bring it to the place, and it'll be done that way. It'll be the fuel truck will have to drive out there and deliver it and put all the pollution in the air, and then
follow up. Gonna make it work for your pay today.
What's that? Yeah, do that.
Make it work for your pay.
That's good.
Why should agriculture get a tax break when the other guys out there don't? Why don't we don't get this tax break?
Okay.
I mean, if I have a business, is it because that you're not driving on the road? Is that it, or what's the deal?
Yeah, exactly. That's I know that at our place, a lot more than 60% of our gas is not used on vehicles that don't drive on the road. So that's the answer.
Senator Heimbaugh, Senator Wellborn went into the computer and looked, and they are creating a fiscal note on your bill.
They told me they might do that.
Yes, so we wait. Senator Gross.
Just to follow up on Senator McGilvery's question about and your response, Senator Heinbaugh, about a fiscal note. I'm glad to hear there is one coming because the chapter that you're amending here is on the gas and vehicle fuel tax. Part four is on the gas and special fuel tax. So if you're getting a tax refund, that's going to have a fiscal impact. Wouldn't you agree?
Senator, or Mr. Chairman, Senator Gross, no, I would not agree because, like I said, if we don't, we're not able to fill up in town and get the receipts, then we'll have it brought to the house and get it filled up there. So I don't agree with that at all.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman, to clarify, Senator Heinbaugh, are you saying that when you have gas delivered, you're not subject to the fuel tax?
Exactly right. We can if we have a bulk receipt, then we can turn it in and get we have to pay the tax and let the government use it for a period of time, and then we get it back after a while. So
all right, I'm not quite tracking the logic, Mr. Chairman, because it sounds like you're paying the tax one way or the other, Senator, and could you say that again for my clarification?
I'll just tell you again how to do it. And actually, this has a 50-mile radius from your operation, so you can't do it all over the state. But when every year or every time we fill up, we get a receipt. When we fill up bulk, we get a receipt, and then whenever we want to, we file a tax refund, and the state sends us money because we can get up to 60% depending on how much you derive from agriculture. So that's what happens. So all we're asking to do, instead of getting a receipt on bulk, we can take the receipts from when we fill up in town and receive the gas tax refund back.
All right, that makes a little more sense. I'm going to have to read the bill more carefully, Mr. Chairman, to make sure I understand that and track that because I see two different types of fuel here. You're adding gasoline, and it's or special fuel. And then there's, in part four, there's definitions for both gasoline and special fuel. They're different. And I guess I need to understand how those are treated differently in the tax code. Mr. Chairman.
Is that a question?
Thank you, Chairman, for the sponsor. So basically, I'm almost thinking a fiscal note in this aspect is going to probably be a net neutral situation where you automatically, so I understand that you're going to automatically, instead of having to go through the whole process, you can just, you're already doing it anyways. It just allows you to do it at not as a bulk rate, but as you go and get it, correct?
Exactly, Senator.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Friedel.
Senator Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to maybe, if we do this a little bit differently, maybe it'll help Senator Gross. So, Mr. Senator Heinbaugh, so the way we used to do it, so we would get bulk fuel delivered, and that comes taxed. At the end of the year, which bulk tax is not under this section of law, bulk tax is in a different section. So at the end of the year when you go to do your taxes, you submit those receipts and you get a portion of that gas tax back. What this is allowing you to do is do the same thing except when you buy it at the pump when you're buying gasoline. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Glenn, that is correct. And right now we can do it with just fuel, with clear fuel, but we can't do it with gas. So that's what we're adding to it. In fact, last legislative session, we passed that law. So.
Okay, further questions from the committee? Seeing none, sponsor care to close?
I sure will. Thank you for a nice hearing, and thank you for the questions. And I think Senator Gross will just learn to trust me, I think, one of these days. So, thank you. Thank you.
That closes the hearing on Senate Bill 285. Okay, members, we obviously have to sit on Senate Bill 285 because we're waiting for a fiscal note, whether we should be or not, but we are. Does anyone have any interest in doing any one of the other three that we heard today, or do you want to leave them all for Thursday?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Boland.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I would kind of like to just have an overnight sleep on this if we can, and then
certainly
maybe do it, Thursday?
Right.
If that's not going to hold up anything.
No.
That way we should have a fiscal note by then, and we can just clear the whole pile out at once.
Yeah, that's most certainly what we can do.
There's a fiscal note on its way on Senator Glimm's bill as well.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah, we definitely will wait.
Hey, don't shoot me. I'm just a messenger.
They told me there wasn't one coming.
So we'll sit on all of these so that if anybody has any amendments for anything, you know, get them to Gwen within 24 hours so she has time to get them processed for us. Anything else, Senator Friedel?
I just figured if you guys were so adamant about getting something out of this committee, I know tradition, we usually on these types of bills, you guys vote the same day to move it on. But I have no problem waiting till Thursday as well.
Okay.
Some amendments coming on yours.
On mine? Sweet! Yes!
Okay, so Senator Boland, Senator Gross, you'd rather wait till Thursday for that one too? Okay.
All right.
Then we'll do all of them on Thursday, and now we have House bills, of course, but we're not going to mess with those at this time. My understanding is that tomorrow, I would imagine at 5 o'clock, is going to be the deadline for people bringing bills. And for some of us who chair committees, if you bring a bill on the last day, you get like a two-minute hearing. So if we get something tomorrow, a Senate bill, we will be hearing it on Thursday in addition to doing exec on all of these. So unless you got something else, we're done for today. Okay, thank you. We're adjourned.
Make sure you
Where's the bullet stuff?